Hi, I'm Victoria Prom. This is the St. Ida Interviews, and I am with...
Dan Legacy.
Dan, do I have your permission to record you?
Yes.
Great. So to start off the interview, can you introduce yourself? What do you do around the church? Stuff like that.
Sure. My name is Dan Legacy, and I have been primarily the music director here at St. Ita, and that has been since 1998, and also my responsibilities and ministry here have involved liturgical coordination as well, so training and coordinating liturgical ministers for the celebration of Holy Mass on Sundays. So that would be like people who read the scriptures during Mass, and also song leaders, cantors, Eucharistic ministers, things like that, ushers, the whole gamut.
So, can I ask you, what's your connection to like the Rogers Park community in general? Like, do you live in the area, or if so, like how long?
Yeah, so I started working here officially in July of 1998, and I currently live just a block west of Loyola campus on Lakewood and North Shore, and have been there since 2001, so almost as long as I've been working here, the parish.
Can you describe your first experience at St. Ita? Like, what was your first impression?
So I remember coming up actually to the rectory entrance. It seemed a little scary at first. And the secretary who answered the door at the time, her name was Barbara Bannock Murata, and yeah, she was really friendly and opened the door and all that and welcomed me. And once passing that threshold, things were, you know, really, I mean, friendly and open. The pastor who hired me, firstly, was Father Lawrence Maddock. And he had been here since the late 80s. And he was just a really wonderful and holy priest in the Archdiocese of Chicago, and a great mentor for a lot of like seminarians who were studying to be priests and things. But he was also a very spiritual man, and although in many ways he was really open and just friendly and welcoming to people, and just really had a beautiful spirit of bringing people together, and you know, encouraging people's faith and in the Lord Jesus, and that, so he was the priest who hired me, and you know, it was a really joy working with him. At the time, we were looking to celebrate the centenary of the parish in the year 2000. So St. Ita, as its parish, was initially founded in 1900. With Irish immigrants, and so hence the name St. Ita, who was one of the great mother saints of Ireland, along with St. Bridget, and also lived a little bit after the time of St. Patrick. So it was really beautiful experience, you know, in that regard, and I guess I would say that I kind of lost my train of thought on that.
No, you're all good. Like, what would be, let me think, what is one thing you would never forget about, like, the beginning of your career here, or the beginning of, like, your first impression?
Well, one of the things that has always amazed me about the parish is just the diverse number of people who worship here on any given Sunday. So, I mean, in many ways, it really does feel like an experience of heaven. I mean, because it's so inclusive of people from all over the world. And also from all the spectrums of, you know, society too. So there are, you know, people who, you know, have means, but some who don't, and also some who struggle in their journeys, you know, with whatever issues it is that they're dealing with. And so I think that's probably one of the things that I just find most... have found most enjoyable in being a minister here, and also just it's been spiritually edifying for me to be able to work in that way, you know, and to bring people together, you know, praising God with music and that great gift, you know, that God has given us. And so
you mentioned the demographic of the church and how it's very diverse. Can you talk a little more about like how the demographic of the church has changed from like from the beginning of the time you're here to now?
Well, I would say actually the remarkable thing is, even though I mean, even though people have come and go, and there always has been like a transient element with the parish and even in the neighborhood, just because of the type of housing, you know, like with the apartments and condos on Sheridan Road, you know, and that's primarily where a lot of the parishioners have come. Or, I mean, there are some in the local neighborhood here, but not as many as we get from other places closer to the lake. And so, really, as far as the demographic shifts, there hasn't been, like, a change in the diversity, which is also somewhat surprising. Although, you know, again, people come and go, but by and large, there's still that diversity. And even with the parish becoming Mary Mother of God and the unification of the three churches, St. Thomas and St. Gregory, still that diversity remains and actually increased a little bit with some of the diversity at St. Thomas.
So has a bit of a little more personal, but has like religion always been like a part of your life, or did it come to your life like later on?
Yeah. So I was born and baptized Catholic as a baby, 6 months after I was born, and so I grew up Catholic. I wouldn't say my family was like really religious, but. My dad was always adamant that we went to church every week, and he would do that and tried to bring the family too. I'm the oldest of six children, and so sometimes getting all the family together in time was a challenge, but he instilled that, you know, in us, and, you know, at least a practice of our faith. And I would say, I mean, at this point, my sister and I I have two younger sisters, but my other sister is also still practices her faith.
So you've been the music director for about 25 years, am I correct?
Yes.
So what is either the most memorable or your favorite piece that you've performed in your career?
Oh my goodness. That's a really tough question. There's been so many memorable moments of, because in the music ministry here, we would do there was a tradition of doing like an annual Christmas concert, and then for a number of years there was also we added an Easter concert, so. That kind of offered an opportunity to, do some other music too, and sometimes get other singers and instrumentalists involved. It's hard to just say about one piece. I mean, we've also, through the years, have done some collaborations with some of the other churches in the area. So at one point when St. Gregory's was its own parish, I mean, our choirs did a concert together, and also we had done collaborated with St. Ignatius also, and there was another, one of our Easter concerts was a collaboration in this regard. So, I would say, I mean, maybe not necessarily one piece of music. Some of those experiences have been, really memorable and beautiful experiences of doing that. I would say, I mean, in general, one of the things that I find most edifying as a music director is being able to help people to sing. So when the church is singing, like everybody's just, singing with all their heart and raising the roof in song in the church, I think is probably that supersedes like any experience of like one particular piece. Because a lot of the music ministry in particular, I've encouraged people to do the very best that they can in all of that. And so there have been many instances of fine musicianship and musicality that's happened in those 25 years. Thank God. And the Holy Spirit too. But I would say that's probably one of the greatest joys of being a music director. Yeah.
You mentioned that St. Ida's would collaborate with other churches. Mm-hmm. Did they ever collaborate with anyone outside of those who are currently in Mary Mother of God?
Yes. And there was also another service that would happen around Thanksgiving time that involved a lot of the local Christian denominations, or religious, I should say religious denominations. So that would involve like some of the other Catholic churches, but also like the Baptist church and the Jewish people from the synagogue, and also faithful from the Ismaili Center over on Rosemont and Broadway. So those two were other opportunities for collaborating musically and celebrating Thanksgiving together, which was a really beautiful thing too. And we also did North Shore Baptist, which is just around the corner on Berwyn and think it's Lakewood. They had done some special like choral performances of certain pieces like the Forer Requiem and some other things that we would participate in to some of our singers here. So again, I mean, just, you know, a lot of what we were doing, you know, musically was here, but, you know, I always encouraged and tried to do some other things too, you know, beyond just the walls of the church here.
I know you mentioned like non like Christian collaborations. How often would you say, this is more of a two-party question. How often would you say those collaborations occurred, and do you wish that the church would engage more with non-Christian faiths?
So those, the instance I was talking about the Thanksgiving service, prayer services, those would happen annually at Thanksgiving time in November. So I would say for at least, you know, majority of my years here, we would participate in those. And they would also rotate, so different churches would host the service. So, I mean, we did that at times, and some in the synagogue, the Ismaili Center, and the Baptist Church, and we all took turns like sharing that. So that was always a beautiful thing and very celebratory opportunity for us all to gather and give thanks. The church has a history of reaching out and being in dialogue with not only other Christian denominations, but also other religious faiths. And we don't often hear a lot about that because it happens oftentimes behind the scenes with the Pope and some of the delegates that specifically are involved with ecumenism, as it's is the word that it's called. But certainly there always is room to grow, I mean, and to be in dialogue with peoples, especially people who have other experiences, you know, especially religiously and things like that. So
and because I'm also a music person, so I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions about your music.
Okay.
And music.
Sure.
Is religion an avenue for you to express music, or is music an avenue for your religion?
I would certainly say, music, well, especially personally. So I mentioned I grew up Catholic, and I started actually playing at church when I was in seventh grade. My first instrument is violin, and so I was doing that, I mean, at an early age. And so a lot of my experience has always been the, you know, that of it being in church, musically. I studied music, and so have a performance degree in violin, but also a master's of divinity. And so having the musical and the theological degrees have been helpful, you know, in being a minister here. And but I would definitely say that it's the you know, those are kind of the two vines that have grown together in my life. And so, yeah.
So how has like the direction of music, both as your time working here or just being around it, how has it changed like at the time you've been here?
Has it changed? How?
Like when you first got here.
Okay.
What types of music were being performed, or what pieces were being picked, and how it has that changed between then and 25 years later?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, there has been some change. As a music director, I was, you know, when I first came here, I was conscious of like seeing just what had been done before, you know, whatever records there were, like what songs were sung and things like that. A lot of the musical pieces that happen, you know, are supporting usually ritual action, especially as it pertains to Holy Mass and you know, Sunday celebrations, or you know, even special celebrations like ordinations and things that we've had here at St. Ida. And while some of it's changed, you know, there's by and large there's some, a lot of the I mean, some similar things. Some of it has changed depending like on what resources were available. For example, there was at one point there was a youth choir that was more contemporary, and a contemporary group that was actually a well, I would say a liturgical drummer who was part of that. He was excellent, but you know, he had a trap set and some other auxiliary percussion instruments. But so that group would like play for the Sunday 5:30 Mass and sing. And so, you know, some of that music was specific to, you know, that kind of ensemble, or, you know, in some cases it was taking some of the more traditional things and, you know, just adapting them with that musical resource. So some of that has changed through the years. Again, depending on our resources. One of the things we've been extremely blessed with here is our pipe organ. So it was installed in 1951, but by the Wicks Organ Company. And then as part of our centenary, there was work that was done on that. Because when I came here, it was in somewhat disarray. There was some things that weren't working and, you know, it needed some attention. Repairing and pipe organs in general are expensive to maintain, and so it's always been one of those things that we've been blessed with a really fine instrument, and the work that was done on it was also really well done, so that the instrument now has been used for like the American Guild of Organists concerts and conventions and things like that. And there's been performances of concert organists and performers who have come and performed, you know. So that's kind of another part of the musical world that is specific to that, but again, part of the musical set of the parish. And
How would you describe like the impact of not just the organ itself, but like music in general on the church itself?
Well, I would say the church has always valued the use of music, you know, as a way of really just uplifting the mind and heart to God. I mean, we even hear from St. Augustine, I mean, to sing is to pray twice. There's a lot of value that the church places on having celebrations encounters during Mass with music. It's not that every Mass has that, but really the idea is that you would, that the Mass would be sung, you know, from beginning to end. In some cases, you could actually do that. The prayer book is set up in that way that you could do that. So, and also a lot of the tradition of the Catholic Church is chant and music of that nature. I mean, which is basically just, you know, spoken or sung prayer, or you know, putting music to a text in some ways. Sometimes it's been, you know, through the centuries more elaborate, or, you know, it's simple chant. But that being the basis, I mean, there's been a lot of development and encouragement for an experience, musical experience within the liturgy of all different styles of music. So that's how you get, some more contemporary experiences, or actually even incorporating other Christian experiences like hymns and things like that. And I guess those, you know, really the whole gamut of music. So
how would you, I'm trying to think of how I want to phrase this question. So within like the music that you do at the church, would you consider like adding in or doing like more like modern or less music that sticks less to what is normally played at the church, if it meant bringing in a wider community?
I think I understand what you mean by that. Again, one of the things that, and I guess to answer your question, some of this I experience sometimes with some of the sacramental celebrations, particularly like around the celebration of matrimony or weddings, and also funerals too. There's sometimes requests to bring in secular music into the celebration. It's not usually encouraged because of the fact that, you know, what, you know, the music that is a part of Holy Mass is usually celebrating or supporting the sacrament, or the, again, as I had mentioned earlier, like the ritual actions that are happening during the celebration. So, I mean, sometimes there are exceptions made for that, but by and large, a lot of the music that's done is meant or pertains to, you know, what's happening, and as a reflection of that, and again, a reflection of people's faith. So it's, you know, sacred music is what, you know, is part of what does that and edifies that in a way that secular music, I mean, why it might actually be appealing, you know, and evoke certain emotions, or, you know, someone's favorite song or something like that. It's more, you know, the experience of faith that is being celebrated and edified. And so the music, I think, has to speak to that.
What is it about music, especially, it can be just music in general, but, or it can be specifically like music within church, but what is it that makes you like passionate? Like, what is the thing that hooked you onto music specifically?
I would say, I mean, even as a little kid, I was always fascinated by music, or it always resonated with me somehow. Neither of my parents actually played music, but they were great appreciators of music. And so, And they listen to music, you know, on the radio and all different styles and through different, you know, the 30s all the way up to the, you know, present day music experiences. And then what you always experience, you know, as you're growing up, different things. So I started actually playing violin in fourth grade, and then a year later started piano, and then in high school learned to play organ. And so I just was always fascinated by music. It's always been, you know, I played in symphony orchestras and things like that in my college years, and then beyond having that experience too. But I think, you know, in church music, it's, again, the, you know, the edification of being able to help people express themselves musically. And in most cases, it's usually giving glory to God or thanking God in some way, or, you know, just helping people. I think music actually appeals a lot to the imagination. And so, you know, there's a lot of the experience, particularly of the mysteries of the church, and the mysteries of God's love and salvation, that, I mean, you need some imagination to access some of that, because it's not always, like, you know, just very clear. So I think music has the capacity to draw people in, and to, I mean, even if you're not a great singer or something like that, you can still be, like, moved emotionally by music, or, you know, it can help you to, I mean, to lift, you know, the mind and heart to another realm, beyond this one. So I think it's, I mean, that's kind of what I find really most, you know, attractive and beautiful about music as an art. Because, I mean, the other arts, I mean, visual arts, things like that, also have the capacity to do that. But music in some ways is different in how it, you know, lifts the mind and heart, so...
Have you ever, or are there currently, like, are there any, like, programs here at the church that can, like, bring people into music? Like, are there any, like, educational programs? Do they teach instruments here, or just, like, anything that will welcome people into music?
Yeah, so one, with the unification of the churches and into the parish of Mary, Mother of God, one of the ideas was to have, like, I mean, each of the churches kind of has a charism that it has and has supported through the years. So, for example, at St. Thomas, they've had a great outreach to the community with the soup kitchen and food pantry there. St. Ida is the largest of the churches. Has also had, I mean, some of that, but in different ways. So a number of years, the outreach was through Care for Real, which is one of the other neighbor organizations that helps people in the community. St. Gregory has had a tradition of, like, cultural things, so not only musically, but also artistically. And so it more is more or less the cultural center of the parish. And so one of the initiatives that was brought about in the unification was St. Gregory's Hall, a home for Catholic culture. And so that is primarily one of the places in the parish where there's an artist in residence who does painting and has regular things that draw people in that regard. There is a composer, a musician in residence there, Kevin Allen, who's a very fine composer and musician. And so some of the celebrations there highlight some of the major celebrations during the year liturgically, with choral music and things like that. There, although I have done some like private lessons and teaching through the years, a lot of my time has been spent just, you know, doing what I do here in the parish, and so not so much time for that. But
would you consider it like opening public lessons, or would there not be enough like money or time in the budget for it?
I'm certainly open to it. If there were, you know, someone, for example, who was interested in like taking organ lessons or something like that, certainly there would be, you know, I'm open to that. We have at times, you know, tried to engage the community, offering like places for people to practice, you know, students. And so in that regard, we've done some of that. But as far as my time, I mean, has been pretty much spent just doing what I do with the coordination and the music here. So
So regarding your career, if you could go to, like, say the time travel existed, right? You can go all the way back to the very beginning, all those 25 years ago. What was one thing you would say to yourself? One bit of advice, or just one little bit of comfort that you would say?
Advice in which way?
Just something to say to yourself to let yourself know that the future will be, that you'll get through the future, you'll be okay, or something that you wish you knew at the very beginning of your career.
Ah, okay. I think a lot of times there have been moments here and there where I sometimes wonder if, or sometimes being preoccupied with, you know, is something going to work out, you know, if we had planned to sing something and then you have people who are missing or, you know, can't be there to sing or whatever. Sometimes it's, you know, I've relied a lot on the Holy Spirit and some musical miracles to take place in order for things to happen. But I would say, I mean, mostly it's just having faith. I mean, that things do work out, you know, with God's help. I mean, that's, and particularly in this position, you know, it's, you know, we're praying and supporting people's prayer. And so, you know, again, making, and that's, I guess, one of the things that wasn't maybe so clear to me at the beginning, but, you know, that really, you know, all that's, I'm doing and fostering in my ministry here is actually a ministry, and so it's not about so much what I'm doing. I mean, I see myself as a facilitator in some ways of helping people to have a beautiful experience when they come to church, and that it's also that when they're coming, they're experiencing an encounter with Jesus Christ. And whatever happens, during the celebration should foster that experience, you know, and help people to be able to focus in that regard. And so, because sometimes it's, you know, I would say that's not always clear everywhere that you go. And sometimes in music ministry, it's not always clear from place to place. But that's kind of one of the things I would say, not maybe my advice, but is something I've tried to have as an experience or, you know, like a guiding like maxim or, you know,
just like
console, you know, to you know, guide what I'm doing.
How's your like connection or involvement in the church like evolved over time?
Well, I would say that, you know, I mentioned that the first pastor who hired me was Father Maddock, and then he retired in 2001. And so, and that would after the experience of the centennial, you know, so he had wanted to, you know, at least lead the parish through that, because he had been, you know, here for a number of years. But there had been other pastors that have come, you know, since then. So I think our pastor now is like number 7. So there's always something that changes, I mean, you know, with the pastoral leadership. But it's collaborating, you know, in those regards that help, you know, facilitate, again, what's happening in the parish. And, you know, that's, I see my role as, you know, really being in that regard, supporting and, you know, doing what I can to facilitate that. So it has changed, you know, through the years. But, you know, I would say by and large, that's kind of some of my experience. And I mean, even like what I'm doing, you know, now is even different than what, when I first started, and, you know, some of my duties and things like that. So even though, I mean, it still pertains to music and liturgy. So,
You mentioned collaborating with the priests themselves. Has that collaboration generally been easy, or has there been like some difficulties depending on like who's in charge?
Yeah, I mean, by and large, I mean, nothing's perfect, and there's different ideas about you know, how to celebrate and things like that, and. Priests have certain, you know, ideas, but by and large, I mean, a lot of what we're doing is, a lot of the in the celebrations, I mean, is guided by the church's prayer book. And so, I mean, there's differences here and there, you know, to be sorted out, but by and large, I mean, it's mostly just, you know, navigating those and different styles and ideas about ministry and things like that. So,
what is one part of the church that you feel is underutilized, or not given enough attention or credit?
I'm understanding that you're referring to more than just like the physical structure, right? But the, like the life of the church. I think just reaching out to young people in particular, I mean, we do that on a certain level, but I think sometimes, you know, being clear about what it is we believe in and transmitting the faith. We do have religious education. We do have programs for that, Catechesis of the Good Shepherd. I mean, all those things help. And we do have, you know, schools that have been, you know, part of the parish and the church's life. So there's religious education there and, you know, Catholic education. But I still think, I mean, and this is based on experience of young people who receive the sacraments and then are not part of the, but then are not part of the church's life afterwards. And it's really kind of supposed to be the opposite way. And so I just figuring out that dynamic and what is happening there, I think, is a crucial one.
Yeah. How would you feel, or how do you think that the church can like improve on this dynamic?
That's a good question, and I don't really know the answer to that specifically, because I think there's a lot of things in place that are helping with that. But ultimately, too, it's not just like what is experienced here, but it's also like in family life. I mean, families have to encourage that too, parents with their kids, and so some of that is you know, challenging too. And then again, you know, making sure that you know, there are the adequate resources for everyone to just be able to express their faith, and taking advantage of those opportunities, you know, to know their faith well and be able to express that and share that, you know, in ways that are meaningful, and also help other people and attract them to the faith. So, I mean, we had this past Easter, so there were like 18 people who were initiated into the church, so 4 who were baptized, and then 6 who were received into the church, and then everyone was confirmed in that sacrament. And so, I mean, sometimes it's, you know, the ultimately it's the movement of the Holy Spirit in people's lives, and being attentive to, you know, them being attentive to that. And but, you know, it's not just one thing, and it's not always within our control. But I think, you know, the more that we can do to support that or to facilitate it, I mean, I keep using that word, but there's a lot of, you know, it's not so much controlling, but, you know, trying to allow things and giving people the tools and things to be able to be attentive to God in their lives and their faith, and, you know, taking advantage of the opportunity, because we have plenty, I mean, of ways in which to do that, you know. So
how would you feel about so I know in our class we learned that there is a rising number of especially youth mm-hmm. who are identifying as non-religious.
Yes.
So how would you feel, this is probably an oddly phrased question, but like opening up the community to those who are non-religious, just to have them see, oh, this is what we do, this is who we are, and mm-hmm. not so much as the aim to convert them, but just letting them make the decisions for themselves?
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the... So it's called the RCIA, or the Rites of Christian Initiation for Adults. I mean, that primarily is one of the efforts or tools of the church to do that, because it offers regular meetings, and, you know, people are able to engage you know, and as much as they can. Oftentimes it's with the intention of, you know, entering into the church, but it's not always. I mean, there are some people who do engage that experience, but then don't continue on. And again, some of the things that, from my perspective, one of the, so a musical thing that we do that, any of like the, for example, like the concerts, things like that, we have a community organization. It's called the Chicago Chamber Choir, and it is a very fine choir, but we've had a relationship with them for about 8 years, I think it's been, where they perform here, and they have a group that they follow, and is a nonprofit. But again, opening the church up to them to be able to come and perform also gets other people from, you know, different places. I guess it's what you would describe as like maybe a soft entry point for people. You know, they come into the church, they see it, and, you know, maybe think about, you know, coming back, or, you know, those types of experiences. You know, and that's, I mean, as music director, you know, I've also tried to encourage those experiences too, in as much as possible. So it offers, you know, people a way to, you know, to see and experience, you know, something beautiful within the walls of the church, but maybe is not the celebration of Mass, you know, so.
Yeah. If you could preserve only one story from your time at the church, what would that be?
Oh my goodness. Those are the hardest questions to answer. One story. It just has to be one.
We only got one room in the vault for one story. What would it be?
Oh boy. Wow. Any particular type of story? Mm-hmm. It would have to be.
Anyone that you're...
Experience or funny story or...
Any type.
Just the one. Oh gosh, Victoria, that's challenging for me. Because there have been crazy things that have happened too during the years. But oh my goodness, because there's a lot of beautiful things. I mean, in 25 years, especially. Experiences that have happened, and I mean, from people, I mean, witnessing people coming into the church, people who have, you know, like have been married civilly, but then validate their marriages here. Particularly, there's a family that, is from Togo, Africa, and he was very musically involved back home in Africa there in his community, and when he first came here, you know, started singing in the choir because it just felt like a home for him. And you know, now eventually he has brought his wife and children from there, and actually even his mom is visiting too, but since has had other children here, just to see experiences like that are just really so incredibly beautiful, and you know, spiritually edifying to see that people living out their faith in that way, and Really being attuned to the Holy Spirit, and you know, just trying to live out their faith the best they can. It's just for me, I guess that would probably be like one of many experiences. But again, that's just so beautiful to see. So.
Let's see. I think to round out the interview, I'm going to ask you a little bit about the Renew My Church and the Mary Mother of God, like the combining of the congregations.
Okay.
How did you first hear about like the mergers, and how did that make you feel?
Surprisingly, I have, in all my time working here, it always amazed me that, like, even within a 10-block radius, there were, like, all these Catholic churches. And in some ways, we, I mean, there was competition, I would say. I mean, some people just had certain, I mean, that was their parish where they would go. And, I mean, they were just, you know, it was a very parochial existence among the Catholic community in this area. So when Renew My Church was introduced and to us, you know, especially firstly to parish staffs and things like that, it didn't surprise me, because, you know, realizing that, you know, just the Catholic population in this area, you know, was not necessarily the same it was even when I first started working here. And so, yeah, there needed to be something addressed. And, you know, I was not shocked by that. But how and what would transpire was kind of what I guess I found, I would say that the Holy Spirit has been working all along, you know, and I know I keep saying that, but I do truly believe that, because, for example, like when, in 2016, when the Franciscan Friars Conventuals, who are the pastoral leaders in the parish, so they first came to St. Ida when we were looking for a new pastor, and you know, they were also wanting to as a religious community be more involved in the archdiocese. And so it happens that, you know, they started here, which was kind of a shift, because, you know, when you're going from archdiocesan priests to a religious order, it's, you know, first of all, it's a community of priests, so you have a number of priests that live together. And then and particularly Franciscan spirituality has a certain experience of parish, so when you see any of those parishes being led by religious communities or Franciscans, or in particular, it's they have a certain model of that they follow of how they celebrate the sacraments and things like that. But that really was kind of a beautiful happening for, I think, not only the parish but also this area, and a preparation for what was to come with regards to the unification of these churches, because this is one of the few in the archdiocese that is actually three active churches, and so it takes some finessing and some good vision, and then of course something like a religious community which had the number of priests to staff a reality like this. So I think, by and large, I mean, it's not perfect, but I think all the churches in this parish are benefiting somehow from being together and unified. So
How would you like to see the three parishes work together over the course of like being combined and like into the future?
I think really some of what I would hope would happen would be just more vitality in what the vision of this parish is now. So I mean, as far as like, you know, the outreach and some of the programs that are happening at the Cultural Center at St. Gregory's Hall, that just people avail themselves more of those experiences and are able to, you know, that the Catholic community grows and is enriched and, you know, able to meet the needs of the neighborhood and things like that. So.
Was anything lost, would you say, in the merger of the churches?
I would say, very basically, yes. I mean, we all lost our status as parishes, as parish churches. So, while canonically, I mean, that's somewhat of a big deal, you know, again, I think there's something that we're all getting from the fact that we're now one parish. And I think the process of all that was, even through the strangeness of a pandemic, which had everybody reeling in some way, I think coming out on the other side of that, you know, God has been with us and guiding us through that. And, you know, certainly there's always room, I mean, to grow in community and again, in the experience of what all this parish has to offer. I think there are people doing, you know, taking advantage of that, but it would just be nice, I mean, from my perspective, to see more of it be further reaching than just like, you know, this area. There is some of that, but again, to make it, I don't know, more, again, more vivacious, or, you know, the vitality of Catholic community, that it's contributing to that even more so than it is now.
You mentioned that part of it happened during the pandemic. How would you say that the pandemic like impacted both St. Ida and the whole process of unifying the churches?
Yeah, so we first unified with St. Thomas of Canterbury, and that was in 2019. Think in 2019, and so and it was May of that year, and so then with the pandemic happening in the next year, we actually had basically like the reset button pushed on so much of church life, as it were, with, you know, not being able to meet, and then just being, you know, small groups, and eventually building from there. But then it was in 21 that the merger happened with St. Gregory the Great. And so, you know, it's still, I mean, even just 3 years later, you know, still a new reality. But I think it was strange. I think one of the strangest things was realizing in 2020 that none of the churches really had an experience of the Triduum and Easter. So, I mean, we did do, we did live stream, or eventually figure out that, and there was a celebration, but again, it was a limited number of people, you know, that could be there. So, you know, it wasn't completely lost, but that was just a very strange experience, probably the most strange. That would probably be one of the experiences that was the most unusual in all my time here. But I think growing from, you know, from that experience, you know, has been helpful. I mean, it's never been the same. For example, for the smaller churches, for St. Thomas or for St. Gregory, I mean, they have, I mean, celebrations of Holy Week have since, you know, been primarily here at St. Nita because it's the largest of the churches. I mean, we can accommodate more people. And so, and this past, I mean, Holy Week and Triduum, the church was full, you know, which was another beautiful thing to see. But, so again, it's, you know, I would say that's probably the, what was lost. I mean, those experiences. And yet there seems to be, you know, some understanding of, you know, what's necessary as a parish and, you know, again, coming to terms with that reality. But again, you know, that it takes time. Yeah. So.
How would you see the Mary Mother of God combination looking like in 5 years or so?
Yeah, that's another good question. What I was mentioning about the just the growth in vitality, I mean, that's, I would hope to see just that there's more involvement and, you know, more people availing themselves of what's being offered in the parish. Because, I mean, it is a lot. I mean, there's times where I'm interested in things that are happening, but it's like I'm either tied up with something else that I have to do, or, you know, the timing is, you know, off for me. But I guess that's what I would see the most. I mean, just trying to a stronger Catholic reality and presence of the parish. And again, you know, as we continue also, you know, seeing that there are parishes around that are still being closed, other churches, I hope that wouldn't be the case for the churches here in the parish, but again, finding, you know, those ways that we all work together and, you know, really kind of grow as a Catholic community.
What do you think about the Archdiocese efforts in the Renew My Church project?
I think the Archdiocese is really trying to be responsible for the resources that it has at present. Number one, considering just the changes in people's engagement with the church. and experiences. And while the closing of churches and those kinds of realities are always, you know, painful and sometimes discouraging for the faithful, I think the Archdiocese is really trying to do its best to, you know, to really focus its efforts and be mindful of how it can best serve the, you know, the larger Chicago community, even if that's, you know, at a loss of some of the, you know, the churches that, you know, just for whatever reason are not having the, you know, attendance that they need to stay alive and to be cared for. So.
All right. I think I have one final question. It's a little bit of a two-parter for you.
Okay.
So are you worried about the future of the church? And if so, what do you think the church itself can do to alleviate those worries?
I'm not so worried about the church in particular. I mean, I think my faith tells me that there God is always with us in Jesus Christ, and so that while things change, I mean, and even like the realities around churches and things like that change, that the church will continue to survive in some way, shape, or form. I would just hope that, you know, again, what my contributions have been and just trying to, you know, serve as best as I can, that that those make a difference. I mean, I think sometimes you hear that explicitly. Sometimes, you know, you just have to rely on the fact that what you're doing is making a difference. And sometimes you don't know that. But as far as what the, you know, I think, I think some of the ways in which the church is trying to engage the world right now, I mean, I think are hopeful for at least trying to encourage people in their faith, and also trying to attract people, I mean, through beauty and truth. And so I think those eternal truths are will help keep the the church in good stead. So
all right, thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. It's really nice to have you. I'm going to do something called a room tone, which is basically I'm going to hold the mic away from me for a little bit and just get the sound of the room for editing purposes.
Okay.
While I'm doing that, I want you to think about one question that I did not ask that you think I should have asked.
Okay. I'm not sure. I mean, I guess one of the things is maybe would be good to ask is like what, but I think I answered it actually in some ways, but just like what's your experience of how your experience of faith has led you to be, or led you to this place, or to, or kept me going for 25 years. Which is sometimes what I wonder to, because it's there. I have known of some other music directors who've been in their positions, you know, for quite a number of years. 25 years is a long time. I mean, I'm probably about halfway through my life, and so in general terms, I got an early start. I wasn't even 30 when I started working here, so you know, that, I mean, it's been a wonderful experience. I mean, I really love what I'm doing. Not that it's been easy all the time, but again, to be able to, to me, it's been a real privilege to be in a community like this one, and to facilitate worship and surrounded by such beauty, not only just like in the church itself, but in the people who've come to worship here through the years, and their contributions and generosity of spirit and faith. I mean, whether that's, you know, serving as an altar server, or, you know, sewing altar appointments, you know, to decorate the church, or serving food, or providing food for the many wonderful receptions that have occurred, you know, through the years, or, you know, helping someone who's fallen, or, you know, all those things, you know, or someone who reads the scriptures particularly beautifully and well, or sings in that regard, you know, so many things like that. I just have a lot of gratitude in my heart to God, and yeah, so, and thank you too for your efforts with this project, you know, which I think is a really important one, and important for recording history and helping people to know in the future about, you know, the wonders, you know, wonderful things that have happened here.
All right, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Victoria. Thank you too.